Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and we're going to be starting out with a program this week that I think is a fascinating one. It's all about poltergeists, and I know you've heard about them, and maybe you've even had an experience or two with them. Once you've had the experience, it's not something you forget easily. My guest, Michael Clarkson, is a man with a very interesting background because he is acknowledged as an expert in fear. Ah, Michael, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Donna.
Michael, you have written other books. They've been about psychology, and you've won newspaper awards because of stories that you've done on investigations, including a Pulitzer Prize nomination that was with a reclusive author, J.D. Salinger. But you really have found the aspect of fear very fascinating, and you work in the Niagara region, you're in Ontario, and you've researched a lot of ghost stories. And before we went on air, you said you have had an interest in this for over 30 years. What was it, Michael, since you have been writing about psychology, what was it that prompted you to write a book specifically oriented towards poltergeists? And what is your definition of a poltergeist?
Sure. Well, Donna, this has sort of been on the back burner, this topic for me for a number of decades. I was a police reporter in the Niagara region and came across this reported poltergeist case. And I happened to know the police officers who were involved. Now, I didn't get around to this until about 5 years ago, but it's a subject because I believed what had happened, what had gone on, because I believed what the officer said at the time. I've been sort of following poltergeist cases throughout the years and researching them and putting them aside. And one day I just sat down and thought I'd write this book because I think with the police officers as eyewitnesses, I think I have something pretty firm to go on. Now, you ask what my definition of poltergeist is. It would be, after reviewing 75 cases, Donna, I suppose it would be very similar to the definition given by one William Roll, who is a parapsychologist in Georgia. He's semi-retired now, and he researched and investigated firsthand hundreds of poltergeist cases. And his definition is recurrent spontaneous psychokinesis, and that's RSPK for short, which involves bizarre movements of objects, noises, and other paranormal effects caused unconsciously, usually by a person, otherwise known as poltergeist activity or energy. Unlike psychokinesis, Donna, PK, I think your listeners are probably a little more familiar with that. Unlike PK, RSPK seems to occur spontaneously and repeatedly over a period of time.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have reviewed 75 poltergeist cases. You've interviewed more than 100 witnesses, parapsychologists, psychologists, university professors, magicians, skeptics, and your investigative reporting background would have come in very handy with putting this material together. And in setting this book up, you realize that there have been stories about poltergeist for as long as people have been around, to the best of our recorded history. And you also post some interesting details in that there was a 2003 Harris poll that said more than 2,000 Americans revealed that 90% believed in God, 89% in miracles, 68% in the devil, 51% in ghosts, 31% in astrology, 27% in reincarnation. And in 2005, there was a Gallup poll showed the belief in haunted houses declined with age. 56 of the people between the ages of 18 and 29 believed, while only 26 of those 65 and others did. And you also quote something about Britain. 2004, 42% of the people believed in ghosts. Now, I know for most of the people listening to this show, they'd say, well, so what else is new? We already know about that. Let's get more into the poltergeist. What is one of the earliest recorded cases of poltergeist that you came across?
Sure. The I think it was 530 A.D. In Rome and Italy, and then there was another one in 8900 in China. And yes, you're right. It's been reported, Donna, throughout history. And I suppose this is one piece of suggestive evidence in that they have been reported throughout history and throughout the world, and yet independent of one another, they all seem to have the same dynamics and characteristics.
And what's that?
I'll give you some of the common denominators which seem to go across the board. Now, every case, I must point out, has its own individual characteristics and idiosyncrasies, but here are the trends of the 75 cases I study. Usually, they have a poltergeist agent, a person, and it's usually an adolescent entering puberty, immediately around who these strange activities, the moving chairs, the falling paintings occur, and he or she is usually quite intelligent. Also, there's usually some sort of repression or frustration of the poltergeist agent by others and a high level of stress in the household prior to the start of the activity and continuing throughout the case. Now, most of these cases, Donna, they're very short-lived. I would say the lifespan is usually from 1 week to several months, although there are exceptions in every little thumbnail sketch I have here. And then again, we have widely reported, independent of one another, dramatic events, the unexplained knocking, electrical malfunctions in modern times, movement of objects and furniture, occasionally reported, are levitation of objects, electrical appliances working without power, and stones falling apparently from nowhere. And finally, the other common denominator seems to be a mischievous intent on the part of the poltergeist agent or the person, rather than a downright malevolent intent. Although, Don, I found about a dozen people in these 75 cases were injured, but none of them seriously.
Now, you bring up some interesting points of information, like the woman Nina Kalagina of Russia, and you say she was given the pseudonym of Nelia Mikhailova. And when I read about her, I remember reading about this woman years ago and how difficult it was for her to do these experiments. These were very, very, she was really under, I call it a glass dome of observation. And this woman was able to move things and had tremendous, tremendous abilities. But it also taxed her a great deal physically when she was being tested. Give us a little bit of background about Nina. She's even though she was given the pseudonym Nelia, she was quite an interesting woman.
Sure, and your listeners can probably YouTube her and be fairly confident that the old videos, what you'll see of her, seem to be legitimate. Obviously, Donna, these days with YouTube, it's mm-hmm. easy to fake a poltergeist. Her name is Nina Kulagina, K-U-L-A-G-I-N-A. I would encourage your listeners to YouTube her. Now, she's a case, and I have a number in my book, of someone who seemed to have RSPK, or poltergeist energy, when they were young, and they were able to transform it, or it followed them into more mature years as PK, or psychokinesis. And this was the case for Nina. Initially, there was reportedly poltergeist activity in her apartment, as I've described in these other cases, in the 1950s and 60s in the Soviet Union. Then, for three full decades, very exhaustive, as you point out, the Soviet scientists, including two Nobel laureates, tested her, often in very closely controlled lab conditions. And they claimed she could move things by focusing tightly with her mind. Mm-hmm. In fact, they put her sometimes into a cage to prevent trickery, or she was forced to move things placed in a plexiglass cube with video cameras rolling, and no one ever caught her cheating. I'm glad you brought that up, Donna, because I think this is actually the best case of a tested person or agent, because mainstream science still does not believe there's enough evidence to prove that PK or RSPK exists. But I think Nina Kulagina is a pretty strong case for that. And I've got another case in my book which is ongoing right now. A woman in her 40s, again, a little bit different and not going through puberty. She had poltergeist activity when she was younger, but now she's, like Nina, she's using tight focus to try to move things consciously with her mind. She's made a little pinwheel with a pencil and a little pinwheel on the top with paper, and she focuses tightly on this because she does not like her RSPK. She thinks it's negative energy. It acts up, apparently, when her husband gets her upset. She's tried to transform this into PK, and she makes this wheel move, reportedly. She gave me a demonstration, actually, on Skype, and that helps to relieve what she calls a negative energy in a stressful situation with her RSPK.
Well, I remember that story, and what I found very interesting is that she had had challenges with emotional relationships. And when I was reading through the story, I thought, what a shame that this woman had not encountered someone that could make her feel comfortable with her capacities, and that she has these emotional disruptions, and to be able to develop the discipline so that this is something that she could work with rather than feeling like it's malevolent would just be absolutely wonderful. And I commend her for developing that discipline of focusing her energy on something so that it will not cause disruption. But it's really fascinating stuff because here she is as an adult trying to utilize something that she has been naturally endowed with. And not knowing what, I mean, it's like anything else. What are you going to do with this?
Sure. Another interesting layer of that case, and I call this woman Sarah. I cannot use her because her name, real name, there's a stigma attached to this subject, as you can imagine.
Oh, yeah.
Not only mainstream science, but mainstream media and mainstream public to a point, even though, as you accurately pointed out in my the survey, that most people believe in some area of the paranormal. However, there's still a lot of skepticism. People don't want to be associated directly sometimes with a paranormal. But another interesting layer of interest with Sarah is that she is actually studying to be a scientist. Now, she claims, we have a few minutes to go into her case a little more in depth.
Sure, let's do that. Sure. Yes, I think she's interesting.
Yeah. Now, she had a couple of accidents in her life. One, she was very young, and one in 1993, an automobile accident, she thinks, and William Roll, the parapsychologist who I mentioned earlier, who's working on her case, they think that the accident somehow altered her brain.
Mm-hmm. I'd agree. Mm-hmm.
Yes. After the 93 accident, automobile accident, she started seeing what she said were ghosts, bright lights, and moving objects. And she was given the Myers-Briggs personality test before and after her accident, and it showed different results. She said that before the accident, she was extroverted, a party girl, and now the tests show she's more introverted. Now, William Rowe believes that the two serious accidents, one was when she was younger, may be the major cause for her PK and her RSPK powers because they impacted her brain. He said, I think they knocked out some systems and enhanced others. He said he can't prove it, but William Rowe thinks there was a shift in power from her brain's left hemisphere, which controls logical and rational thinking, as we know, and the right hemisphere, which is more intuitive and is what William Rowe calls our psychic hemisphere. Mm-hmm. Now, following this accident, Sarah says her attitude towards life changed. She said, I suddenly wanted to go back to school and finish a science degree. She's now working on her PhD. She said, intuitive knowledge wasn't enough for me anymore. I wanted to know why things they are the way they are. Somehow mm-hmm. the accident turned me into a scientist. Yet the whole thing seems backwards. As a scientist, it's much harder to accept the possibility of the world being intrinsically conscious, and it is really hard to accept the sorts of anomalous cognition that seems to have been enhanced by the near-death experience which she had in that automobile. She passed out. She thought her grandmother called her, her late grandmother called her to the grave and then told her to go back to life. So Sarah said after that, how can you explain why the universe takes someone who is very connected to the bigger picture and then transforms her into someone who would be overwhelmed at the thought of such a worldview? Before the accident, I did not need proof of my connection to the universe, and now it's a struggle for me to accept such things, although the proof is constantly biting me on the backside. it seems like becoming a scientist was just one step in the process, and I now see the universe as asking me to integrate the girl I was before with the woman I am now.
I think that's very well said. I think that is very well said. But also, it has been my observation that many times when people have a physiological trauma, that it does affect the entire nervous system. It's not just the brain. And there is, and I'll use these words, a vibratory frequency alteration, and the whole body experiences it. And when you have that happen, then you're not going to be able to go back to what you were because you've got cellular memory of that experience, and everything is just heightened. It's
sure,
an amazing experience.
You could have also a type of post-traumatic stress disorder, which I've studied a little bit.
Mm-hmm. So I think science is always going to have a challenge with this because you can't put it in a bottle and put a lid on it and say, this is it, folks. It's not that way. And it varies so much from person to person, just like with the 75 cases that you've researched. Not one of them is going to be exactly the same. You'll find perhaps a common thread that may seemingly run through it, but it may exhibit an entirely different and unique patterning of its own in each and every case. But there is that commonality. And I think what science tries to do is repeat something exactly over and over and over again. And the human condition is not going to be duplicated over and over and over again in a clone-like manner. There's always going to be some variant.
Yes, and also you can't produce it sometimes on demand. In other words, Sarah did this Skype demonstration for me, and I'm fairly skeptical from a news background. People have always tried to sell me things, but I watched her for about 20 minutes moving this pinwheel, which she held, and was a few feet away from her. Her mind was a few feet away from it, but she was focusing always and on the pinwheel, and it went around and around for about 20 minutes and probably could have gone on forever. Now, I can't prove she didn't have a wire hooked up to it, but I was fairly impressed. Now, she said she felt comfortable with me, and she was talking to the pinwheel while she was doing that. She was saying things like, we can trust Michael, he's not going to use my real name in the book. So she felt comfortable. However, doing it on demand in front of a scientist was a different matter. She went to Laurentian University in Sudbury, Ontario, to a respected neuroscientist by the name of Michael Persinger, and she felt stressed. She could not make the pinwheel move for him. He said to her, if you feel a little more relaxed later on tonight back to the hotel, why don't you call us and we'll try again? So that's what happened. He couldn't go, but he sent an assistant, and the young assistant apparently did see the pinwheel move, and I thought, well, this is good. I'll use it in my book. Dr. Persinger, can you please give me the young man's name? And he said, Michael, absolutely not. If you put his name in the book next to poltergeist activity or PK, you think he'll ever get a job in mainstream science? He'll be blackballed. So this is another problem we're coming up. And in fact, Persinger himself says, he's quite skeptical, but he started studying things like poltergeist activity, and he says he's been cut back from government grants because of this. But you're absolutely right. Unless science saw it happen, sometimes it didn't happen.
Well, even if they do see it happen, it still doesn't happen.
Sure. Yeah, that's
because it doesn't fit the paradigms they've been indoctrinated with. It really takes courage. I mean, look at Copernicus, for heaven's sakes, and what he went through, and Newton. I mean, to be able to make these breakthroughs, look at what scientists that have gone in for quantum physics have had to endure.
Yes.
So you have all of these paradigms, and when someone like you brings out a book that is researched, where you have done some very interesting stories here with facts to back it up, it's really, really a good thing. Now, somebody may say, yeah, but you didn't give their real names. Well, one of the things that happens when people's privacy is violated, then many times it becomes a media circus. And there will be those that are the skeptics that literally want to rip apart everything. And unless someone has a strong disposition and can just chuckle and sort of let it roll off their back, they're really not going to be interested in hype and publicity. You find a lot of the people that have these very fine talents prefer to be low-key. They just don't want to be out there in front. And having been in media for so many years, I can't blame them. Because you have a lot of very ignorant people that will just slam you down just for the pure joy of having something brand new to talk about, and they don't know what else to do with their mind or their mouth. Neither one is operating on an intelligent level.
Sure, and another problem with that, Don, is that in many of these cases, we have some children who maybe seem like they're troubled, according to the family. The family does not want publicity. They don't want to let investigators come in. However, if we can talk about this for a minute, there have been some tests on poltergeist agents after the fact, and they found that a number of common denominators, which seem to be very interesting, they seem to have unique brains, not all of them, but many of them, a slightly higher rate of epilepsy and schizophrenia. There was a parapsychologist in London by the name of Andrew Green, and he said that some of these agents suffered from a front temporal lobe epilepsy. It's a brain disorder in which people can suffer blackouts lasting from a minute to about half an hour. And during these blackouts, an unknown power of the mind may be released, which can cause objects to move. Now, how do they do it? There's some other theories, Don. And it seems to me that when we're dealing with these unusually brained people, a number of components have to come together. I would almost call poltergeist activity a perfect psychic storm, because besides that, I think that these agents tap into somehow, subconsciously, tap into types of energy nearby. In other words, they're almost always in the room when this occurs, and yet they seem to be tapping into some energy, whether it's household electricity, geomagnetic storms in the area, magnetic fields, or electricity from our own bodies, mind bodies. I think we forget sometimes that the beat of our human heart has electricity in it. And
right.
Also, there's electrical signals moving across our nerve cells. We see that when we walk across a carpet and zap, we hit the doorknob. But I think it's very interesting that all these components, I think it's one of the main reasons why poltergeist activity is so very rare. It is a very rare occurrence, because so many things have to come together in order for it to take place. And I think repression and frustration seem to be right at the top of the list. In other words, we're dealing partly here with fear and anger reactions, albeit in a very unusual manner.
Well, stop and think about you being in a crowd of people. You can be in a crowd of people and everything's fine, and then all of a sudden, maybe out of the blue, you are standing next to someone and you're repulsed by them. You don't know what it is. You're literally reading that person's energy field, because that's what we are. We are electrical units, and we're sending and receiving constantly. And those energy patternings, if you have someone who is very disturbed, I can remember being around an individual many years ago, and this individual was furious and was very, very angry. And they walked into the room, and I remember walking across a room section to greet them, and this energy was just thrown at me. And it was all done mentally. Mm. They didn't say a thing verbally, but it was literally thrown. Now, I didn't see it in the sense of seeing a bright light or anything like that, but it hit me right in the middle of my stomach. It was just like someone had just hit me with 14 fists. And I remember feeling that and going, whoa, what's going on here? And what it was, and this was an elderly person. This person was very, very angry about their circumstances. And so they had generated an energy. And when someone feels that, and when someone has an experience like I had, and I'm sure some of my listeners have gone through the same, when you have something like this, you realize there's a lot of things you can't see, but you can be affected by.
Yes.
You can be, you know, this is an amazing thing. So your book about poltergeist brings forth that dimension of what I'd say is well-worded awareness of how to think about this. But I've experienced this on various levels, and it's not something I make fun of at any time.
No. You mentioned the word anger. Have you got a few minutes to talk about anger and fear?
We sure have.
Sure. Anger, as we know, largely in our world, Donna, is a very destructive force. We just can't control it. However, if you take the D off of danger, what do you have?
We have anger.
We've got anger. It's really put into us as a protective device. We just don't know how to use it. It's terribly misused.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I've actually, in my fear research, I've come up with a formula to try to change things when I've been choking under pressure, because I've worked so long in my life on deadline pressure and athletics. And in crisis situations. And I found that anger, using anger very briefly, can actually help you change your hormonal chemistry from too much fear and too much adrenaline when you try to choke, when you're attempting to choke and you're not performing well under pressure. But I found that if I changed my mindset to anger very briefly, it changes my hormonal chemistry from too much adrenaline to a more proactive mix. This is just for production. This is not for everyday living. More productive mix, adrenaline and dopamine and testosterone. I know ladies don't like to hear that word testosterone, but you're using it more as you're becoming business people. And it can be very productive. But here's the last thing. You have to. You can only use anger, I would say, for about 1 to 2 seconds. If you don't, it'll blow up in your face. And then the third and most important part of this formula, from fear to anger, the third part is a dispassionate response. You put that anger, you put those emotions into whatever it is you're doing, the skill. You do not direct it at another person. You don't direct it at yourself. You direct it at whether you're typing under deadline pressure, whether you're having a very important meeting with your boss, or if you're an athlete, you focus it into your skills in the crisis situation. And then it can act as an additive because it's just part of our fight-or-flight system. And our fight-or-flight system is a tremendous asset to us. It's helped us survive for millions of years physically, but now I think some people are learning to adapt it into mental powers. And I've done some crazy things. I found some crazy things in my life and gone into, for lack of a better expression, out-of-body experiences when I've used this formula, and I seem to have more time, room and time to operate. But it is not something to do every day. It's something you have to study, and it's something what varies from person to person because, as you say, yes, we are all different. We've all had different experiences. We all have different baggage, and so we filter the world differently. But whenever you feel like you're challenged, Donna, your fight-or-flight system will kick in 35 to 40 times a day, believe it or not. Most often, it's in very small increments, and we don't really feel it. But we do feel it subconsciously in the form of stress. In fact, I would argue that all stress, as we know it, is fear energy. That emergency fear you feel when you're challenged, and your body is coming to your defense with these amazing hormones, but most of us do not know how to control them. And then they become distress, and we all know what a huge problem distress is in our life. And perhaps that elderly woman you came across who was feeling very angry did not know of any other way to release her distress except to get angry at the world or angry at herself.
I agree. And that is seen and demonstrated. Police officers have to deal with this frequently. Anybody in the mental health area, post-traumatic stress syndrome, often that's encapsulated within it. So it's really, really an amazing factor to recognize that with poltergeist activity and in the research that you talk about in your book, The Poltergeist Phenomena, I think you bring forth very nicely and very well the various things that people need to be aware of. And cultural environments present a lot of things that people are not aware of. And there's so much emotion behind this. And I think as more and more scientists begin to understand that this is something that is actually normal and natural, that the only reason that there's perhaps not more awareness of it is because we haven't learned how to be comfortable with it. We're going to have to break away from paradigms that are centuries old and recognize that what people used to be burned at the stake for is not something that's abnormal. It's part of the human experience, and again, it demonstrates itself so uniquely and differently in your stories in your book. The Poltergeist Phenomena really are just very, very well done. I know we're just about out of time here, and I had asked you before the show about your website. You said that it's down, but if people want to find out more about the book, they can go to your publishing house, newpagebooks.com, newpagebooks.com, and that is a venue that will enable people to find out about your books. And of course, they're all in the major bookstores, etc., and you've been doing a number of interviews, and I'm so pleased that you were able to join me. Is there a thought you would like to leave my audience with, Michael, before we close?
I just think people should try to keep an open mind. And as you say, yes, there's culture, and we come to some of these things with superstitions and closed minds. Keep an open mind, and also remember you have a lot more mental powers than you think you do. And if you can try to tap into those, then I think you'll be a happier person.
I agree. Michael Clarkson, thank you so much for being my guest. For those of you that are interested in this kind of material, this book is very direct, very clear. Michael has quite a bit of journalistic background, investigative reporting background, and I think that you'll find the way he presents his material, one, it's a fascinating read, two, it is comfortable for a layperson to read, and three, if nothing else, it may challenge you to look at some different ways of thinking and perception in the part of investigation. What would you feel about this if had this happened in your life? Well, I have no idea. But why not read something that is a little bit out of the norm and educate yourself about some real facts? The Poltergeist Phenomenon, In-Depth Investigation into Floating Beds, Smashing Glass, and Other Unexplained Disturbances. Michael, again, thank you for being my guest, Michael Clarkson. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. Four out of the last eight Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone lines are now open. Let me give you our toll-free worldwide number of 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And if you'd like to call in and chat with me, I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. If you are a new listener to the show, all I need is your first name or your initial. Of course, I always like to know where you're calling in from. And then sit back, relax, let me tell you what I perceive about you as an individual. Here's our lineup for this week, Playing the Unified Field, Carla Hannaford. This is a book that I think has some marvelous information regarding education, how we can actually go about improving ourselves in many ways when it comes to the learning curve. So we've got a lot of good things to talk about with Carla Hannaford tomorrow. Now, on Wednesday, we are going to be playing the best of Donna. The reason being, I am going to be on a plane flying to New York City to do an appearance at the National Publicity Summit. I'll be doing that early Thursday morning. I'll be in the Big Apple Thursday through Saturday, and then I'll be back in the home office and the following week. So just know that on Wednesday we'll have the best of Donna. If you know of anyone that has heart problems, you'll want to hear the interview by Dr. Lundell because it is a real powerful one. Also on Thursday in New York, we're going to be talking with Danny Lyon, the color of his underwear. Yes, I know, you're going to have to tune in to find out what's behind that description, that title. And then Melanie Solomon, a woman that walked the road of being an alcoholic. She said AA is not the only way. She is going to be talking about different ways of dealing with alcohol problems and also narcotic addiction. So we're going to be discussing that with her on Friday. So we've got quite a dynamic lineup of guests. And remember, you can find out about any of the guests that are upcoming on my program by going to where I'm listed on DBS Radio, station number one. Check in to the Donna Sebo Show, and you'll see a little button that says show information. Tap onto that, and you'll get a listing of the guests that are coming up. You also can go to my website and check out my newsletter, and that is DelphiInternational.com. That will give you the information about upcoming guests as well. Well, it's springtime. I was talking with somebody in New York City not very long ago, and they said the weather was awesome. It was 75 degrees. I said, that's great. Here in the Pacific Northwest, we are having a sequence of a little bit of sunshine, temperatures in the 30s, and then we get sleet. Then the sleet goes away, the sun comes out, blue skies show up, and then we get some gray and we get some rain. So we're having a very interesting array of Mother Nature's mood changes, and it's all in one day. Hummingbirds don't care, they're just having a blast. They're flying around. The flowers don't care, they just take it in stride. And Mother Nature just says, well, this is the way it is in the Pacific Northwest. You got to just live with it as it is, and that's the truth. So wherever you are, I hope you're having a good time, and just realize spring is here. Yes, it is. It really is here. It's just that I think sometimes Mother Nature gets PMS and she forgets. So just bear with it. Eventually, those blue skies and sunny hours are going to be there for you to enjoy. And of course, that means that summer is going to be around the corner, and maybe you're feeling like you want to get outside. You want to do some exercising. What if you're not seeing the results? What if you are someone like me who used to walk 5 miles a day and nothing shifted? No, I really mean nothing moved. I was strong, I was healthy, but I wasn't happy. I wasn't seeing the toning that I wanted. Well, here are some tips by some individuals who have written up a report in the Journal of Physiology saying if you work out in the morning before you have breakfast, it prompts the body to burn more fat for fuel. And this is something that they tested with a group of volunteers who all exercised before eating an oversized carb-rich breakfast, and they gained virtually no weight after 6 weeks, while those who ate the same breakfast before working out put on 3 pounds. Now, go figure. I don't know. That's what they came out with a report. So if you have not been working out, if you sort of slacked off because the winter months, you just didn't want to be out there, or you chose not to exercise at home, previously toned muscle fibers will come back really quickly, even after months of inactivity, if you start doing what you need to do. The body is amazing. It's absolutely amazing. So I wanted to give you that little tip. Oh, by the way, have a pad of paper and a pen handy. I have a recipe for a key lime coconut angel cake that is awesome, absolutely awesome. So I think you would enjoy it, and I'm going to be sharing it with you today. When I found this, I said, oh boy, this is perfect. It's light, it's easy to fix, and it is delicious. Yes, yes, yes. So I'll be sharing that with you in just a little bit. But one of the things I wanted to talk about, because we are in the time of the year where we're feeling like we do want to be out of doors. I just mentioned something about exercise. Well, many times we forget, because of winter months, depending on what part of the country you're in. If you're in California or in Hawaii, this would not apply. Because Californians, I know I'm a native Californian, what you do is you have an abundance of fresh vegetables. You don't think twice about that. That just comes with the California lifestyle. Lots of veggies and that type of thing. Well, there are things about your raw vegetables that really are good to know about. Romaine is very good for helping we women stay free of wrinkles, besides avoiding intense sun and sunburning. Apparently, your romaine is packed with antioxidants. It strengthens skin cells, and it improves your moisture content in your skin. And also, it's got the factor that helps to prevent skin cancer to begin with. And then rapini. Now, this is broccoli rabe, that's what they call it, and it is just loaded. You know, you have this, the greens are just loaded with all kinds of nutrition. So it's got a bacteria killer in it that it'll zap antibiotic-resistant strains of H. pylori, which is that particular character that is the cause of ulcers, digestive upset, and bad breath. Also, they find that the components inside of broccoli rabe is able to halt the growth of cancer cells on contact. And also, it lowers blood levels of cancer-causing carcinogens. Radicchio. Oh, it makes it's so beautiful to put in salads because it's this vibrant, vibrant red, and it is loaded with magnesium and calcium. Great for helping your muscles de-stress. And it's got a relaxant in it. It's called Intibin, Intybin. This is a natural sedative. It calms your nervous system. And in Italy, the old, old world attitude was that radicchio was great for inducing sleep. So they knew it centuries ago. We're just catching up with it today. And so it's loaded with antioxidants, too. Arugula. Now, arugula has a very unique taste to it. But again, John Hopkins University did some research, and they say, you know, it prevents estrogen overload. It is just so good for women, and it aids the liver in removing toxins like mercury from the body before they can be absorbed into the bloodstream. See, these vegetables, kale, that's one of our favorite vegetables in the SIBO household. It's just absolutely wonderful. I've talked with African-American women who were raised in the South, and many times these people came from environments that were financially deprived. I know my husband, and he's from Virginia. He came from a family of 10, and when he was growing up, they were lucky if they even had a ham hock in the house. So you have these different environments in the southern part of the United States. Well, people would have their gardens, and they would grow these green leafy vegetables. And, of course, during the winter, the kale is just rich with nutrients. And by golly, they all ended up living real long lifestyles. And they have lived to be in their 80s and in their 90s, and they were growing these vegetables in their yards. And sometimes if they were in a position to do so, they would put them up. Well, your lettuces you can't really put up. You have to eat them when they're fresh. But your kale, your spinach, your mustard greens, there's the winter vegetables that you can grow that are going to be hardy enough, and your cabbage, for example, that are loaded with nutrients, and they're meant to enable the body to keep the immune system healthy. So these are things that women especially need to pay attention to. Guys need to pay attention to it, but gals, we really need this more than you could imagine, especially as you get older. It'll keep all of the organs healthy, and it enables the body to do what it needs to do in keeping you vibrant and well. And it's just so important. So just a few details there on a little bit of nutrition that I think would be very beneficial to you. Now, remember that those of you who are listening to me in New York, I'm going to be there and I will be available. I'll be there on Thursday, available from Thursday through Saturday for private consultations, and I'm going to be available for some other opportunities as well. In fact, I've been invited to attend a particular event that's going to be going on in New York City, and I'm just really pleased with that because I'll have a chance to meet one of the authors that I've had on the show, plus a number of their associates. So it's really going to be an exciting time, even though the trip is a short one. New York City is a fascinating place. It is a wonderful place, and nobody really ever looks out of order because anything and everything goes in New York City. It is a potpourri of life that is absolutely amazing to experience. Well, when we come back, I wanted to share that wonderful key lime coconut cake with you. Oh, is it good? And then I wanted to also tell you something about an ethical will. Have you ever heard of that? I hadn't heard anything about an ethical will. Heard about the living will and a lot of other things about wills, but an ethical will? Well, when we come back, we'll find out more about that. This is Donna Sebo. You can give me a call, too, if you like, at 888-815-9756. We'll be right back.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
PBSRadio.com. It's not mainstream. It could be here. Information and knowledge bring humanity closer to truth. PBSRadio.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. Let me share this recipe for a key lime coconut angel cake. Oh, this is so good, and it is a wonderful compliment. Like, if you're going to have some people over and you want to just have a coffee clutch, so to speak, and you want to serve something that's just going to be mouth-watering, absolutely delicious, or if you'd like a light dessert, this is absolutely wonderful. Now, it's made with angel food cake. And, of course, we all know how light and delicious that is. So you can use a box mix, or if you have a favorite angel food cake, then great. Go ahead and use that if you have a recipe of your own. But this is how simple this is. It is absolutely delicious. And you want the vanilla flavor in your angel food cake, naturally, because what you're going to have as the complement here is just scrumptious. Now, this is what you're going to need. Of course, you're going to have your angel food cake, but you're going to need a cup and a quarter of ice-cold water, one can of sweetened condensed milk, a third of a cup of key lime or regular lime juice, one teaspoon of grated lime peel, and that should be freshly grated. I know you might be able to get it dried, but the fresh is better. One container of your favorite frozen whipped topping, and it needs to be thawed. And then you need one cup of flaked coconut, whatever you prefer with that. And then you might want to have a little fresh fruit like kiwi or strawberries handy. Now, again, you make your cake, you have your angel food cake, and you're going to cut it horizontally into three layers. You're going to have your bottom layer cut side up, and you put that on your favorite serving plate. Now, this is what you do with the rest of the ingredients that I gave you, the cold water, the sweetened condensed milk, the lime juice, the lime peel, etc. In a large bowl, you're going to beat your milk, your lime juice, and lime peel with a wire whisk until smooth, and, of course, it's going to be nice and thick. Then you take your whipped topping, and you can fold that in. You just very gently fold into that mixture. And you're going to take 1 cup of that lime mixture and put it evenly over the top of the first layer of the cake. You put your second layer of your cake, center it carefully on the bottom layer. You spread it evenly with another cup of lime mixture. And then you put the third section right on top. And you're going to then frost the top and the side of the cake with the remaining lime mixture. And it's a very light touch. This is just something that's going to go around the cake on the top. And then you take your coconut and sprinkle it on the top, and then very gently go and put the coconut along on the sides. What I recommend is before you put your cake on the cake plate itself, put some pieces of wax paper there. And that way, as you're putting the coconut on, one, you're going to be able to pick up any left pieces that might drop to the plate itself. You can just take the wax paper and fold it up so that it's all going to look just absolutely wonderful. And then you're going to be able to remove those wax pieces from underneath the cake, and the platter will just look beautiful. And then you garnish your cake with your kiwi fruit and your strawberries, and oh, this is so good. Now, I know that when it comes to cutting an angel food cake, especially when it looks as beautiful as it's going to look when you serve this, you'll want to use a serrated knife to cut it, and you're going to find that it is really better if you fix your cake and if you can put it in the refrigerator until it's ready to serve. And then that way your frosting and everything will just stay very firm, and you bring it out and it's just absolutely delicious. Make 16 servings. And I believe people will go back for seconds. An absolutely marvelous recipe. So I wanted to share that with you today. An ethical will. Have you ever heard of that? I had not. And the basis for an ethical will really was brought forth, not as an illegal document, interestingly enough, but it's making sure that the members of your family really understand what you want done when you leave this experience. And you just really leave them with more than what most people ever consider leaving loved ones with. And sometimes it's even better than the finances that you might be leaving. Now, this is an idea by a woman, Jo Klein Sibuhar. And she said about 10 years or so ago, she discovered a letter from an uncle who had died 25 years previously. And he left a very special note, and he emphasized the importance of keeping an open mind. She said, "It was priceless to find such a poignant record of his values in his own words, and I realized that there's a common thread of morals and beliefs in my family, and every family has that." She said she feels that the 78 million baby boomers here in the United States may want to pass down certain things to people that are very important to them, members of family, maybe even friends. And she said, "I've seen people do this, writing a letter describing their hopes for the future when a child is born or to a young person when they graduate or get married." And she said, "It really is important because you are going to be relating things to people that perhaps you never would have considered before." So she had some tips on what you should write and when. She said, if you want to write your own ethical will, start with a quotation from someone else that expresses your worldview and explain why. If you get blocked, simply write at the top, other people found the words I can't find, this is how I look at life. And she said, also pick a time in your own personal history that was significant to you. Maybe it was when you went met that certain someone. Think of three words that capture your essence. Elaborate on them with stories from your life. Maybe do a family tree. Find a song or song lyrics that express a sentiment you want to share. And think beyond pen and paper. She said, you might even want to do a PowerPoint show of some kind. It's similar to maybe scrapbooking, but I think a little bit more personal. This is Donna Sebo. Remember, always you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. We've got a wonderful show tomorrow. I hope you'll join us. Enjoy your day. Enjoy your life. It is a good day to be alive. This is Donna Sebo. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.